Welcome to the Scott Shepper Podcast. I am a man on a mission to create an army of independent writers, creators, and thinkers who make a hell of a living doing what they love. And it all starts with one thing, and that is doing things the old way, the hard way, the deliberate way, the anti-net way. Listen in as I share thoughts and rants of what goes on behind the scenes as I create an independent knowledge empire, where I get to spend my days doing what I love, reading, writing, and thinking while making a hell of a living and helping my people do the same. Hey, what's up, friend? Welcome back to another episode of The Daily Scott Shepper. I'm coming to you live in episode number 215 from Orange County, California. Was just celebrating my parents' 40th anniversary. Yes, 40th. I know. I'm lucky. I've won the ovarian lottery. Blah, blah, blah. No, but seriously, I am lucky. I'm grateful. Quite frankly, I don't know how a shitbird like me deserves to have a lovely, but very cheesy, at least my dad is cheesy, family. And, well, I'm up in Orange County recording this right now. And, of course, every single day I commit to shipping to you updates of my latest work, whatever I'm working on. And as you know, if you've been following me, my latest fascination and obsession has been the Zettelkasten, which I term the anti-net. And it's at least the anti-net variation of the Zettelkasten, which really a Zettelkasten is an anti-net. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, then, well, I'm talking about stuff that's not only, well, it gets into the weeds and complexity that one would expect even like within the complexity of cryptocurrency. I'm talking about the world of information science and personal knowledge management and how to read better, how to think better, how to learn and retain information about everything that you read, and how you then use that to dominate the world, whether it be as a copywriter, as a marketer, as a writer, as an author, as a researcher, as a creator. Now, what I'm going to talk about today revolves around, and before I begin, I'm recording this on a Sunday at 4:59 p.m. post meridian. So, yes, I even ship on Sundays, the Sabbath, because at least on Sundays I'm Jewish, so the Sabbath was yesterday, but on Saturdays I'm Christian, so Sabbath was today. So, you know, I flip-flop, therefore I'm not in violation of any religious law. So, what I'm going to get into today revolves around the dirty, ugly truth that you really ought to know about, like as it revolves around Luhmann, Nicholas Luhmann, and Zettelkasten, and nobody even talks about it. Like Sankei Arens doesn't talk about it in his book. That is essentially not even Zettelkasten, in my opinion. And well, in the opinion of you, if you actually go through Nicholas Luhmann's actual online archive and see how he actually used and built his anti-net Zettelkasten. By the way, I'm just going to start referring to it as anti-net Zettelkasten for now until I finalize the terminology. So, you know, maybe I'll even flip-flop some of the time, but most of the time I'll say anti-net or anti-net Zettelkasten. So, what I want to talk to you about is the dirty, ugly truth about the anti-net. And it is something I've quite literally never seen discussed before as, you know, a reason why you should not actually build out your own anti-net. And first off, the reason why you should even care about understanding the nature of the Zettelkasten in the first place is not to make your life easier. I mean, Luhmann, despite what you have heard from other authors trying to popularize the technique, it was not easy. It was not easy work. It did not make his, well, it, the way he did it, it essentially made the final writing of his work easier than just sitting down with a blank sheet of paper. But he worked and wrote essentially all day. And it was broken up between two walks with his dogs, one at lunch and one at like around 4 p.m. Otherwise, he was reading and writing. And so the Zettelkasten is not a system that will suddenly magically make your life easier. Nor is it essentially the best system to produce over 60 books, or 70 books, actually, as some sources claim, like Lumen did. And everyone gets obsessed with hearing the sheer number of publications that Lumen published, which was about like 550 articles and titles, and 150 of which were unpublished and found in his estate or found in his, I don't know, home or his office. And he also produced 70 books. 70. 7-0. Frickin' A. And everyone hears that and is all of a sudden enraptured and just fascinated with the idea that this must be some magical technique, that the Zettelkasten, the anti-net version of the Zettelkasten, the true version of the Zettelkasten, must be some magic technique. And it does yield amazing benefits in terms of complex, in-depth, creative insights that is essentially required to produce genius-level work. And it does so in a way in which you would have otherwise not had the breakthroughs and the thinking insights had it not been for you setting up an anti-net and using it with, and here's the key, in the exact same specifications, the four components that Lumen outlines himself and that I have outlined in my previous episodes and previous podcasts and my previous daily writings. If on a certain day I feel like testing out the practice of writing. And I, of course, will make this very, very clear and concise and his specific technique very straightforward so that you can implement it and that you can use it. And I've said it before, I'll probably just keep rehashing and saying the same thing again. I intend to make the guide and the work that I've done completely free digitally for everyone, but I definitely want to provide you, aka the person listening to this, who is committed to growth and learning and world domination and also has and or appreciates a Stewie Griffin, Family Guy, badass type of attitude. And so I'm going to, of course, throw in something massively extra special for you. Don't know what it is yet. Hopefully, and what I'm thinking is just it'll be like a free signed version of the physical book, maybe some other things. And, you know, hey, we'll figure it out, but it's going to be freaking awesome. And anyway, you will find out specifically how to create the system, the Lumen-esque anti-net Zettelkasten that will actually unlock genius-level insight in your work. And this is of particular importance if you're a knowledge worker, if you're someone that produces research, writes, or, you know, is not a professional at doing such and does it on the side and does it for fun and a passion. And here's the thing, though. That is not everything up to this point of what I've just said is not the ugly truth that never gets talked about or discussed about the Zettelkasten, about the anti-net Zettelkasten. And the ugly truth really revolves around what Lumen actually produced. So let's break it down. In reality, Lumen's anti-net produced books that were, number one, poorly written. They were sleep-inducing in terms of style, and this is not just my own opinion. I've learned to like it, and it's challenging, right? But everyone talks about, I mean, I'll get into the author that calls it soporific, which is essentially means it's a fancy word, fancy pants, you know, highbrow, doctrinaire, pedantic word for saying it's a sleep-inducing, boring-as-balls book, okay? and books, like 70 of them, by the way. And I will break down very specific examples later on, but if you don't believe me, pick up one of his books and, well, try reading it for yourself. The second aspect of Luhmann's books and his writings was that it was extremely and perhaps unnecessarily and quite frankly unapologetically convoluted and very difficult to understand because of the academic prose and also because of the constantly breaking streams of thoughts that he stemmed between almost every other sentence, it seems like, perhaps even every one. And these two things and essentially caused one scholar who wrote an entire book and considers Luhmann's social theory, quote, the best analysis of contemporary society presently available. It's forced such a scholar to declare that, well, Luhmann, because of this, remains far less prominent than he otherwise ought to. He also goes on to say that, and essentially describe Luhmann's writing in precisely the manner that I have just described it. Sleep-inducing, poorly written, convoluted, extremely difficult to read. And as a result, it made him a lot less prominent of an author and a person, at least as far as the general public and the people that are not academics and intellectuals among that crowd. So it continued to leave him as an obscure figure. And I'll talk about this at some point in the future, but Luhmann, quite frankly, he freaking loved it. He was a troll, and I will share with you how much of a troll he was. It's actually pretty hilarious, and I like him even more. He almost, I guarantee you, he fits in with the Stewie Griffin irreverent humor clan like you and I are in. So no one ever talks about that either, that Luhmann was a troll. He was almost like ascribed to the political philosophy of absurdism. And here's the thing. Even though all of these things were true about Luhmann and his writing, it still produced genius-level work that has lasted well past his time and may only grow as scholars, especially in English-speaking countries, actually are able to translate it. Like they can't translate all 70 books because it just takes so much freaking time to do, because you have to break down and understand each and every single segment of his sentence, right? In his terms. And a lot of the times he doesn't even define his terms. He defines it in another book or in another place or randomly, and you have to just dig and do research. It's like almost as if you're, I don't know, an archaeologist or going on a treasure hunt and going on a, I don't know, one of those riddle room, you know, puzzle experiences and have to figure out everything. So it's a challenge. Now, hey, Scott Shepherd here. Real quick, this podcast is sponsored by me. Yes, me, Sir Scott of Shepherd. I am committed to never shilling some dildo hipster crappy freaking product like all the other podcasters do. All right? My only ask, however, is that you spend 10 seconds right now, literally pull to the side of the frickin' road, the freeway, stop, and rate and review this podcast. Share it with a friend. This will help me spread my movement. You see, I want to create an army of 1,000 independent writers, creators, and thinkers who get to spend their days writing and creating, using analog tools while making multiple six figures if they even need to, and more importantly, building a tribe of people that they were called to build, okay? And I want you to rate and review this podcast because it will directly help me in this mission. That's all I ask. All right, now back to the regularly scheduled program. Peace. His work and his prominence may grow in the future, and he's definitely still a well-known and well-regarded figure. Well, a little bit of a mixed message, a little bit of a mixed feedback that you will get from probably different professors in the sociology realm, and especially within the German sociology realm, is because Luhmann was such a troll, and he was so advanced and complex in a lot of his theories and thoughts and his work that because of his absurdism, trollish type of philosophy and his thinking, which was quite literally correct if you followed the trail and took the time to understand it, well, it sounded as if he was, because he would reject the almost very shallow thinking and the non-defined terms and non-rational, in his opinion, thinking of the liberal, like the neoliberal post-Germany era, he would essentially, for some reason, get lumped into the category of being like a very staunch conservative and very closed and not open to ideas such as, well, freedom of thought, expression, that type of stuff, because he would dig into it and question and really dig into the concept and the basis and the logic behind being able to even like define what a certain idea is. And so by doing that, by pushing back, right, and really digging into every single thing, he would not really make a lot of, well, friends in the commonly accepted, very liberal post-World War II Germany academic scene, which was very, 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 very much adamant again. They were very, very adamant proponent for democracy and distancing themselves essentially from what Germany was during World War II. So any sense or character of someone actually, you know, questioning certain liberal, progressive social movements, well, they were lumped into, at least in Germany, and almost ostracized, if especially if one couldn't understand them, into a conservative, anti-liberal, anti-democrat category. And so that's why he doesn't necessarily have a lot of universally well-regarded agreement among certain groups of people. Yet, regardless, he's talked about to this day, and we're talking about him to this day. And he's even basically created, you know, years after he's passed away, a essentially popular neo-note management philosophy, which is, quite frankly, has been bastardized, and he wouldn't even recognize what it is today, and he would not even use it today. And of course, that's my opinion because Luhmann's not here, but I have very compelling and very good reason to believe that he would not go digital, and he would not, and if he ever did, he would not even build it nearly close to how you see Zettelkasten being advised to being built online today. So the one scholar who wrote an entire book dedicated to the exploration and the explanation of Nicholas Luhmann's theoretical work, essentially before he even began writing the book, and even began before the book started, he allocated an entire section of writing, an entire section dedicated to how and perhaps why Nicholas Luhmann produced books that were so amazingly bad, he says. And it can be encompassed essentially by the two properties that I've outlined of Luhmann's work. You know, first, his word selection, style, and tone were that of an academic that gave lectures wherein you left not understanding a single word. And in fact, in Germany, in the German academic scene and sociology scene, that's almost cherished and appraised upon an act that is praised upon if you can actually go to something and not understand a single word, because it shows that the person that is talking has gone so deep and is at a higher level of thinking. That's essentially the way that they interpret it in that academic scene, at least according to this author. And in fact, Luhmann's writing style left you often not understanding a single word. And his writing style is so thickly drenched in this doctrinaire academic speak that the author of the book that wrote about Luhmann's work continually described him as, and his writing style, as soporific, sleep-inducing. So it's not just me. It's someone that holds very high regard for Luhmann, so much so that they wrote an entire book on trying to explain his complex theory and clarify things. So why was Luhmann's writing so pedantic and academic and hard? And was the cause of this, was it the Zettelkasten? Was it the anti-net Zettelkasten? Is it something in which if you adopt the Zettelkasten and blindly ascribe to the notion that it's going to change your life by allowing you to link up your thoughts and thinking, is it going to essentially make you sound like Luhmann? Is it going to make you sound like an academic and write books that are so convoluted and so, well, so deep, yet so indecipherable that you end up doing the exact opposite of what your actual goal is or your goals are? And there are several reasons why Luhmann's style was of this nature. And to what degree is the reason for the output of his work being so soporific is unclear. It's hard to measure. But there's a very strong case that the reason his writing is so academic and hard to read and decipher does not stem from the Zettelkasten. It stems from another reason. And the reason that he was unapologetically so confusing and so academic in his writing style was a very, very good reason. You see, the reason was, it was in order to protect his life, literally. And the reason why is because of something that is not mentioned about Luhmann, at least by Sonke Ahrens, who created a book that, well, essentially was supposed to teach you how to take Luhmann-esque Zettelkasten smart notes, but pretty much created its own Arendsian interpretation and its own Arendsian note-taking school, which is very far removed from Luhmann's anti-net Zettelkasten, the true thing that what it was and that what Luhmann built. The thing that is not mentioned, and it's not mentioned at least by Sonke Ahrens, is something that, well, it may shock you. And I'm not saying that to sensationalize things and to create intrigue. Although, come on, let's be honest. I mean, I am a little bit. But it truly is something that is something that most people should at least know about before they decide to adopt his system and think of him as a just amazingly brilliant man that has, well, a very boring past, and a boring past that just lives and exists within the realm of Zettelkasten and social science academic research. No, the thing that I'm talking about is something that will, well, probably and hopefully, because I'll explain why, but it may turn a lot of you off to Nicholas Luhmann, the man, his theories, and maybe even Zettelkasten. What is this thing I speak of? Well, my friend, that shall be revealed in tomorrow's episode, and God damn, I love teasing you. So, with that said, I'll see you tomorrow. I hope you enjoy, and I must always advise you and remind you to always remember to stay crispy, my friend. Let's see. Scott Shepper, I'm going to check the time here. Scott Shepper, signing off, 5:22 p.m. on a Sunday. Rock and roll, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, real quick. This podcast was made possible by my sponsor, which is me. Yes, frickin' me, Sir Scott of Shepper. You see, I am committed to never shilling some dildo-freaking hipster crappy product like all the other podcasters do, all right? So my only ask is that you spend 10 seconds right now, pull to the side of the road, even if you're on the frickin' freeway, and rate and review this podcast. Then share it with a friend. That's my only ask. You see, this will help spread my movement. I want to create an army of 1,000 independent writers, creators, and thinkers who get to spend their days doing what they love: writing, creating, thinking, and taking notes using analog tools, while also making multiple six figures if they even choose to. And more importantly, I want to help my people build a tribe of people that they were meant to serve. And so by rating and reviewing this podcast right now, you will directly help me and many others in achieving this mission. Peace.